The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Wednesday, the 24th of May, 2006, and this is episode number 61, only about a day late or so. Today's episode should be a little bit longer than our last week's episode. Thanks very much to Jim Race for putting together something on such short notice. I know it was a little bit of a short show, but Jim had, maybe half an hour's notice that he was going to have to do the show by himself. As I said before, I got home Thursday evening, was planning on doing a call with Jim Race and possibly Liam. I opened up the laptop to bring it out of sleep and just had some kind of meltdown. And so the laptop was no longer functioning. I tried to get Skype going on ye old crusty ancient PC, but there's two problems. One, that is a PC running Windows, and two, it was really old. And I don't know if that was the issue or what, but Jim and Liam and I talked for a little bit and struggled for probably about 20 minutes trying to get some kind of decent results out of Skype with, you know, you call me, no, I'll call you, this kind of rigmarole back and forth. Finally just had to give up. So Jim was kind of on the spot and managed to be Johnny on the spot and put a podcast together there with very short notice, and we had something up. And in any event, after that weekend there, I went down to the to Sears Point, a.k.a. Infineon Raceway there in Sonoma, California, to the AMA Superbike weekend down there. Had a good time. Went down there with my wife. Met up with Jim Race, Eric and Aaron Roush, and Jules Chizik, a.k.a. Pop Monkey. And we all kind of got together, had a good time. It's nice to be able to put some faces to names that you talk with on the internet a little bit. And pretty much had a good time there, and also managed to get an interview with Jason DeSalvo that we will play here a little bit later in the show. Jim Race has been exchanging a few emails with Jason, and we finally managed to nail him down where we could, you know, sit for a spell and talk for a few minutes. It's Jim had some good questions for Jason. I pretty much just sat there and acted as mic stand, but it was fun. It was nice to meet Jason DeSalvo, and that will be coming up very, very shortly. Also, on other things, a little administrative stuff, I do want to thank very much Gavin Jones. I received the MotoGP Results 1949 to 2005, the MotoGP Results Guide. And you can check this out at MotoGP-ResultsGuide.com, I think it is. And yeah, it's a MotoGP-ResultsGuide.com. It's a really cool little book, very stout book. And it has just all the statistics from 1949 to 2005 of riders and constructors' championships. And it's, you know, pretty interesting. This information is available on the website, but if you want to navigate MotoGP.com's horrible structure, have at it. I think that this nice little pocket-sized but very thick book is a much better way to do that. So thank you very much for that, Gavin. I appreciate it a lot. That's going to be a helpful reference as we go through. It was kind of cool. And then I had a couple of emails that I thought were fairly interesting, kind of wanted to share with you. And those are, the first one, I came from Dom Perez. And Dom, I comments on some comments that I made in a previous show where I was talking about the camel livery. And that was right after the Turkey race, where we noticed that the camel bikes had team on there. And actually, I'd seen some publicity photos from the preseason testing where they were having team written on there. Now, previous years, when it was camel Honda, we used to have the rider's name on there, Barros, Biaggi, whatever it was. This year, with Rossi and Edwards, rather than having Rossi or Edwards written on there, they just had team. And I speculated that this may have been a Rossi thing, that he didn't want to be, you know, that it is a team effort. You know, it's not just about Rossi and that sort of thing. Or it could be a Yamaha policy that's what they do, because before it was Camel Honda, now it's Camel Yamaha. And, you know, different, you see how this works with different tobacco companies sponsoring different racing teams of what they do. Sometimes they do put the rider's name on there. Sometimes they leave a blank space like Marlboro does. And sometimes they apparently put the word team or what have you on there. So We had these bikes with team. Dom says, after this long-winded intro, sorry about that, but Dom says in his email, I was looking at the Camel bikes in motion, and a couple of things occurred to me. There is a big gap in the side fairing, and the four-letter word team fits the gap without missing much of the letters. The five-letter word Rossi would lose the center of the first S, and even worse is Edwards, which would lose most of the W-A. Further, Byros and Biaggi are typographically similar, so with the layout of the Honda fairing, it looked fine. And I'm not discounting any other possible explanations, but there does seem to be a valid cosmetic reason. And I thought that was a really good theory, and that might have something to do with it, too, that simply Rossi and Edwards did not look good on that particular bike. The Honda RC211V also has a pretty good size, you know, gap in the fairing there and for ventilation. But the way they do it, it's sort of almost it's overlapping a bit. So it's not quite so obvious that you're missing a big chunk of the letter. But with the Camel or with the Yamaha bikes there, Dom's right. There's a fairly good size gap, and maybe that's why. So I thought that was a real good theory. Thanks a lot for that, Dom. The next email I have is from Gus Caruso in New Jersey. And he wrote to me a few days ago, and I couldn't reply because of my laptop meltdown and being out of town and this and that, but I finally replied to him today, about 4 days later, and he called me to task on some Nick Harris comments. He says that I had read a listener email disparaging the talents of Nick Harris, and it was an email with which you more or less agreed. Herein lays the rub. Nick Harris is a freaking genius. What's more, you use his voice in your intro. It's heresy. Do you think that you could do what Harris does? This man is the bard of motorcycle racing. Come on. And I replied to Gus that, yeah, to a point, you're right. Basically, I thought that with Nick Harris, I kind of have this sort of love-hate thing going on. On one hand, yes, the guy has been doing this for a very, very long time, and that in itself is kind of worthy of admiration that he's managed to keep this MotoGP gig going for so long. He's very heavily involved in MotoGP and with Dorna, and there's no doubt that the guy is super enthusiastic, which does go a long way. It really does. I think, you know, commentary shouldn't be, unless it's very, very funny, it shouldn't just be dry. You know, it should be somewhat excitable. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you have, say, Jonathan Green that does the WSBK commentary, and it's just out of control. And Nick Harris is not quite that far, but he gets a little enthusiastic. You know, so the enthusiasm is both a good and a bad thing. But then on the other hand, what Nick Harris really needs is someone like Matthew Roberts. And without Matthew Roberts, like this year, for instance, with Marcus, it's just not going so well. Every race, Nick has made some big mistakes with his comments. For instance, you know, calling the wrong rider, or worse, saying that, you know, someone is making a pass on someone else, when in actuality that someone was just passed by the someone else. You know, they're not making a pass; he just got passed, and missing fairly obvious incidents. Things like this, you know, and I know how hard it is to keep everything straight and learn all the info about all of these riders and be able to call a race. And I definitely am not saying that I could do better. I know I could not do better than Nick Harris. I would make a ton of mistakes if I was trying to commentate a race that I had not yet seen, and I'm just watching in the circumstance that these commentators make it. On the other hand, I am not the guy with Nick's job. So when you hear the commentary of you know, the Eurosport commentators, Toby Moody, Julian Ryder, Randy Mamola from Eurosport, that is how the commentary should be done. Or for an American point of view of a commentary team that is just, in my opinion, just top-notch, fantastic, is the Formula One commentary team that we get here on Speed Vision, Bob Varsha, David Hobbs, and Steve Matchett. And I've said that before. They combine technical know-how, humor, bizarre comments, and Bob Varsha kind of just tying it all together as the commentary guy with Steve Matchett doing technical, David Hobbs doing color commentary, and then they have Peter Windsor down in the pits as well. And that is how it should be done, and that's what we need in MotoGP. And I know that Nick Harris is capable of better. 2 years ago, when it was Nick Harris and Matthew Roberts in the booth, and somebody else that I name totally escapes me down in pit lane, that unfortunately here in America we hardly ever heard, it was much better. Matthew Roberts reined in Nick Harris Nick Harris was doing the sort of color commentary. Matthew Roberts was doing a bit more of the play-by-play. They kind of shared the responsibilities the way it worked. And I think that it worked out quite well. And in that case, it was much less annoying. But this year, Nick Harris is kind of just running rampant. You hear the same sort of colorful remarks, like absolutely flying. You hear it 12 times a race or more, you know, 12 times a lap. And it just sometimes gets a little frustrating. So every now and then I just have to vent on Nick Harris. But no, that doesn't mean that I do think that the guy, you know, I definitely think that Nick Harris knows his job. And yes, he is somewhat the bard of motorcycle racing and the bard of MotoGP in any case, to an extent, because he's simply been there that long. And so, you know, Gus and I exchanged a few more emails and it was kind of interesting. And there we go with the Nick Harris rant for the day. Now, on to the next topic, which is, well, pretty much that's about it. Oh, wait, I do have one last announcement. I have finally got my orders in hand for my deployment, and I will be gone the first week of June. And looking at ye old trusty calendar of when my last show will be, I may do a show June 9th, or I may have already turned it over to Jim Race by then. I'm going to work it out with Jim Race exactly when we're turning things over. And hopefully I will still be involved. I've said this before, that I'm going to try my hardest to continue to be involved in MotoGPOD and help Jim out in one way or the other, either sending emails in that he can read, or maybe recording something, or doing Skype calls, or whatever. But in any event, the podcast will be turned over at that point. And and the one last thing, one more thing. I mentioned earlier on that I was considering doing the another track day. And yes, I have finalized that decision, and I've gone ahead and purchased my tickets for the Pacific Supersports Rider track day on May 30th here in Portland. So there's quite a few people that listen to the show that are up there in the Portland area, and I've had quite a few inquiries. So this is putting out the official word that yes, I will be up there, and I hope to see you and stop by. I'll be the guy with the silver FZ1. So stop on by, say hello. I'd love to chat with you real quick. Okay, that's enough of the administrative rambling and the reader email, which is not really rambling. It's very interesting. But in any event, let's just get on with our race wrap-up of the French Grand Prix at Le Mans. All right, let's talk about qualifying a little bit. The Friday free practice sessions were dry, and Valentino Rossi and Colin Edwards pretty much dominated those two sessions, swapping the fastest time between them, Rossi getting one and Edwards getting the other. But then on Saturday, for the third free practice session of the MotoGP at Le Mans, we had a wet session, and that pretty much turned the whole world upside down with a lot of changes going on as the Yamaha seemed to lose that advantage that they had in the dry. So looked good for Casey Stoner, Kenny Roberts Jr., Shinya Nakano, all top in the timesheets in the free practice sessions. Now for the actual qualifying session, the track dried out a little bit, and rain was kind of threatening, but it was a mixed wet and dry sort of a session that was going on. The riders went out and pushed really hard for some fast times early in the session, and it was overall a dry session. But we still had some unusual qualifying times. Basically, we ended up with on pole position Danny Pedrosa with his second pole of the season. First guy to do that, two poles in this season so far, because we've had five races now with four different riders on pole, showing you what an exciting season it has been so far. Second place on the grid, was Shinya Nakano on the Kawasaki, putting in an excellent performance, had pole position just in his clutches, and Pedrosa managed to snatch it away in his last lap by about 2/10. So that, you know, Kawasaki thought they were going to be on their first pole position for MotoGP, and they were getting very, very excited. It was very, very near thing there, and Pedrosa managed to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat on that one. Third spot on the grid, John Hopkins on the Suzuki, managed to put in a very, very good time. He was actually about 6/10 behind Pedrosa, but didn't have quite such a tight qualifying session as we saw at the last race there. Shanghai and the previous race at Istanbul. But still overall, a very good performance there by Hopkins, no doubt about that. Fourth place on the grid, you're never going to guess it, Randy Dupuynier on the other Kawasaki. Did quite well, kind of probably helped somewhat by the conditions and by his home field advantage. Fifth place, Marco Melandri, and sixth, rounding out row two, Loris Caparossi on the Ducati. Then on row three, we had Valentino Rossi, Sete Gibernau, and Colin Edwards. Rossi and Edwards are not able to capitalize on those Friday practice times that they had going on. Couldn't do better in row three. Still, you know, not too bad overall, but it's not quite row one now, is it? Fourth row, 10th on the grid, Nicky Hayden, suffering from the flu, felt kind of down all weekend long, just couldn't kind of focus quite as well. He's really, you know, kind of knocked out by that flu a little bit there. 11th, Casey Stoner, and one of the Hondas. Christopher Mullen rounding out row four and 12th position on the grid. Then in 13th, fifth row here, Makoto Tomata on the Konica Minolta Honda, then Carlos Checa on his Dunlop Shod Tech 3 Yamaha, and rounding out the grid, 15th spot there, or rounding out row 5, Kenny Roberts Jr. on the Team Roberts KR211V with its new chassis. Roberts had a very promising free practice session number 3 on Saturday morning in the wet conditions, but the dry conditions didn't seem to help, and they were having a few issues, and best they could manage was 15th on the grid. 16th, Tony Elias. 17th, James Ellison. 18th, Alex Hoffman. And then rounding out the grid on row 7 all by himself was Jose Luis Cardoso on the Dantin Ducati. So that's our grid for the MotoGP race here at Le Mans, the French Grand Prix. And how the race will turn out, we will find out in just a second.
Hey, all you motorcycle nuts out there in podcast land. Are you looking for more Moto Chat to fill up your time between rides? My name is Prubert, and I am inviting you to check out MotoCast. Me and my co-hosts Nate and Brandon talk to you about anything from moto product reviews to great roads. And we may even toss in some special guests from time to time. So check us out at motocast.libsyn.com. That's motocast.libsyn.com. We're three riders that really like to talk.
Alrighty, let's talk a little bit about the important event of the weekend, the actual race. We just discussed qualifying. Now we're going to talk about the race. And of course, I am going to disclose the results of the race. So if you have not yet seen it and you don't want the results spoiled, I guess it's probably time for you to stop listening to the podcast. But it's getting a little late in the week here. You probably already know who wins, and it was such an exciting race. The news has been all over the place that you probably know the results anyway. So why don't we just get started? When the lights went out and the riders took off, the front row, all three riders on the front row there, Danny Pedrosa, Shinya Nakano, and John Hopkins, none of them really got that great of a start. It's either that or the second row all got such an amazing start that it sort of made it look so. So it's particularly odd with Shinya Nakano, which why I say it's odd, we'll find out here in just a second. Kenny Roberts Jr. had a problem right after the warm-up lap with his motorcycle and had gone into pits to change to his other motorcycle. Since this had been declared a wet race, they have the unusual MotoGP rule that we haven't actually used to the best of my knowledge yet, although there's probably an exception, but where they have a second motorcycle standing by, you know, with different tires. And because the race is declared wet, they can pit and jump on a different motorcycle. So in any event, that worked out to Robert's advantage. He jumped on his backup bike and ended up starting the race quite late. But in any event, the actual riders on the grid that started the race, Melandri got a fantastic shot up from the second row. Actually got the whole shot going there into turn 1-2 complex. Then we had a little issue. Rossi had come up from the third row, pushing very, very hard into turn two. He was catching up to Pedrosa and the rest of the lead group there, which, you know, by this point it was pretty much all just one big group, but he was making his way through. Rossi took a very tight inside line, and Pedrosa kind of had a sort of a late apex, kind of slashed across the front, and basically more or less clipped Rossi's front wheel. I'm not 100% sure if there was actual contact or if it was just extremely close. But in any event, that pushed Rossi to the inside of the corner. He hits the rumble strip on the inside, which causes him to stand the bike up a bit. Now he goes wide, runs into Dupuynier next to him, which bounces Dupuynier to the outside of the track, collecting Gibernau and Edwards. very lucky Gibernau and Edwards were to have not gone down. Both of them go across, trip through the gravel trap, kind of cutting the chicane. Meanwhile, poor Depunier goes down in turn two on the first lap of his home race. A nasty looking crash. Believe he's okay though. Then Rossi continues on, and the rest of the leaders there were all zoomed by. It's kind of a startling crash there. Now, while all that was being recovered from, Hopkins actually managed to pass Melandri to take the lead. We never actually saw that pass. We don't know where exactly it happened, but all of a sudden, Hopkins is in the lead, passing Amadrosa. So we had there at the end of the lap one, Hopkins in first place, Melandri second, and Danny Pedrosa third, Loris Caparossi fourth, and Shinya Nakano fifth, and Rossi sixth. That's at the end of lap one. Now, however, Rossi started picking riders off and moving up the progression, and by about, he gets up to second place by lap three and manages to push her, starting to pressure Hopkins now for the lead. Pedrosa, meanwhile, back from fourth position, puts a pass on Melandri, which doesn't stick, and then Melandri makes a mistake and goes a little bit wide, and Pedrosa and Caparossi, get through. So that relegates Melandri down to fifth, and we've got Pedrosa and Caparossi in third and fourth. Shinya Nakano, also on lap three, got tagged with a jump start, so he had to do a ride-through penalty. And that's why I said earlier on that considering his start didn't really look all that great, I speculate that probably what happened was he sort of did the slight jump start and kind of caught himself and then did his actual start, and it just all kind of combined to mean that that great qualifying position of second on the grid ended up being wasted because the ride-through penalty pretty much killed his race chances. Nicky Hayden, who, as we said earlier, is battling the flu, was down there and in round fairly far down the order. I think he was in eighth position around this on lap three. Then on lap five, Rossi manages to put the pass on Hopkins, and Rossi's in the lead. So he starts checking out a little bit. We had Hopkins in second, Pedrosa pushing hard behind Hopkins, and this went on for a few more laps. Then on lap eight, Hopkins runs it wide, and Pedrosa goes through. So we have Rossi, Pedrosa, and then Hopkins for a couple of laps. Then lap 10, disaster for Hopkins. He loses the front going into a corner. Just been pushing a little bit too hard. Front just kind of glides out from under him, and next thing you know, he's sliding across the track. Manages to get the bike up, still working, gets it back out on track. Actually not dead last. He was ahead of Alex Hoffman and Cardoso, which incidentally, Hopkins and Hoffman traded spots on their leathers for each other's websites. So Hopkins has alex66.com and Hoffman has hopperracing.com in a spot on their leathers that was previously unoccupied until they can line up other sponsors. So I digress. But there on lap 11, we have Rossi still in lead. Pedrosa pressing really hard, not letting Rossi check out at all. And Rossi had made an interesting tire choice, apparently a last-minute decision. He went with a medium front with the different profile. So he has a medium compound front, slightly smaller tire, and a hard rear, whereas Pedrosa was on a soft front and soft rear. So, yeah, sure, Pedrosa's doing this great this early in the race, but what's going to be happening later in the race? Now, lap 15, we start seeing Rossi opening up a gap, a very sizable gap. It got up to about 4.3 seconds later in the race. So Rossi hadn't quite fully checked out, but he was definitely putting the moves on and had gotten quite a bit away from Pedrosa there in second. Back a little further down the order on lap 18, Casey Stoner's in sixth place, closing in on Hayden in fifth spot, and finally manages to make a pass that sticks on lap 20. So Stoner manages to get in front of Hayden there for taking fifth place, and Hayden was down in sixth, like I said, there on lap 20. Rossi, however, was, as I had said before, opening that gap, had it up to 4.3 seconds. Then on lap 21, disaster strikes. They the bizarre season that we're having here in 2006 with memorable races continues. Rossi has some kind of mechanical failure. We just see him sort of gradually kind of roll to a halt off to the side of the track there. And you could actually see this happening in the background. They went to a new camera angle. You see, wait a minute. Was that a yellow motorcycle back there? And where the hell's Rossi in the front? And he's kind of doing there. You could tell the cameraman kind of did a double take because all of a sudden he focuses in on Rossi's bike there back at the back. Commentators just kind of blathering on about stuff before they noticed. And it was sad to see that the body language that Rossi put across was so sad. It was just total dejection. And you see it and it's just like, oh, gosh, this poor guy. He just cannot catch a break this season. Fifth race this season, he's got his second DNF in a row. But some kind of unspecified engine failure seemed to affect the Yamaha, and that brought Rossi out of the race there on lap 21. So now lap 22, we got Pedrosa in the lead. Melandri is about a second behind. Now Melandri knows that Rossi's out, so Melandri starts closing it in. And Melandri was on a soft front and a medium rear, and as I said before, Pedrosa was on soft front, soft rear. So Pedrosa's tires are going off a little faster than Melandri's. So Melandri is really pouring on the heat, and he's all over Pedrosa like white on rice. And then on lap 24 in turn 1, Melandri puts a pass on Pedrosa. Melandri is just absolutely riding like mad, and Caparossi, who's now in third place, has been running a fairly quiet race, sort of off by himself, his own little group, in what had been fourth until Rossi's DNF, but he's now in third. And then on the last lap, we see the final lap here coming in. Caparossi makes just this incredibly ballsy pass on the inside of Pedrosa. It's just super, super late on the brakes. Not 100% sure which turn it was in, but he just was very, very late on the brakes and going into a right-hander. Both riders kind of run slightly wide. I mean, you could tell it was somewhat of a chicken duel thing where they neither, who's going to blink first. And it ended up that Pedrosa blinked very, very slightly, split second first, and he was fairly lucky not to have been affected by that because they ended up actually both running wide, going over the rumble strip. But now, for that last lap, we have Melandri, Caparossi, and Pedrosa, and that is how the race finished up. Marco Melandri taking a victory, his second of the season, and once again, the first rider to have two victories in this season. So five races, four different riders winning, and five races, four different guys on pole. So we beat one guy doing two of each. So the results were Caparossi, I don't know why I keep saying Caparossi, and I apologize for that. Marco Melandri taking first place there. Loris Caparossi in second, right behind him, very small gap, but 1.9 second gap. Then Danny Pedrosa in third. Casey Stoner riding an excellent race, coming in fourth. Like I said, managing to put that pass on to Nicky Hayden back there around lap 20 or so. Nicky Hayden coming in fifth place. Well, those guys were only about 3/10 of a second apart, too, by the way. And then way back there, another 6 second back, Colin Edwards taking sixth. Now, Colin Edwards and Sete Gibernau had come back in 17th and 18th position on that lap one. I mean, they were dead last. Dupinier had gone out, and then Edwards and Gibernau were back on the track. So for Edwards to claw his way back up to sixth through this melee is a very admirable performance. Did very, very well. Makoto Tomita came in seventh. Eighth place, Sete Gibernau. So props to Sete as well for the same kind of thing that Edwards did, bringing his way up all the way up from dead last to a very credible eighth place. Ninth position, Tony Elias, rider we just haven't been hearing a whole lot from this year. He's one of the invisibles. 10th, Chris Vermeulen. Yeah, doing okay, riding the Suzuki, but he's not knocking our socks off consistently enough here. Suzuki still has those bugs to work out. 11th place, Carlos Checa, continuing to just not overwhelm me after the such promising preseason testing. We need the right race for those Dunlop tires, and I'm not sure what that formula is going to be honest with you. 12th place, Shinya Nakano, after his disappointing ride-through penalty, kind of spoiling his race there of his second on the grid and all of that kind of thing. Had a chance for a good, pretty good race, even though, like I said, he kind of bollocksed up the start, but the ride-through penalty really hosed the entire race. 13th place, Alex Hoffman. 14th, James Ellison. And then 15th, a couple laps down, John Hopkins. John Hopkins had gone back into the pits after his crash. You know, he picked the bike up after the crash, rode around, kind of taking it somewhat easy, went into the pits, did some work on the bike, went back out there. What the hell? Ended up getting a point. So, good for Hopkins. Shows that he's dedicated. Might as well get the time in the seat and all that kind of thing. And he did get a championship point. Not classified, Jose Luis Cardoso and Valentino Rossi, Kenny Roberts Jr., and Randy Dupuis didn't even finish the first lap. Cardoso entered the pits, some kind of engine issue, and was in and out of the pits, and finally eventually retired. Kenny Roberts Jr., same story, had some sort of a mechanical, not 100% sure on the details of that. I'd like to find out, so I might be checking in with Chuck Axel in there and see what happened. Kenny Roberts Jr. entered the pits and retired fairly early on the race, about 20 odd minutes into it. No, excuse me, about 3 minutes into it, Kenny Roberts retired. So just didn't have a very good race there at all. But in any case, that was the race. It was another spectacular one. This has been a season of just incredible races. I think that the Istanbul race we had a few weeks ago is going to be remembered for a long time as one of the really good races of many years. And this one certainly was no slouch. Very entertaining. Always good to watch MotoGP. So our next race is going to be the weekend of June 4th, and that is at Mugello. So we'll have a pre-race show for that and a race wrap-up as well. And in the meantime, we'll have some other stuff going on between now and then as well. And we may be able to check in with Liam Schubert, who actually was present at Le Mans, if all went well. I know he was planning on being at Le Mans, so we'll give him a call and see how that went as well. All right, why don't we play this interview that Jim Race and I did with Jason DeSalvo when we were down there in Sonoma at Sears Point, a.k.a. Infineon Raceway, for the AMA Superbike races. And we managed to catch up with Jason there on Sunday afternoon in the Yamaha hospitality tent. It's a little bit of background noise, kind of lends some ambience to the whole thing, I think. Saw quite a few people enjoying a plate of various munchies in there, including Greg White, enjoying some Yamaha hospitality. In any event, we managed to sit down with Jason DeSalvo. Had a little chat with him. Now, of course, some of the stuff that we're talking about in here will spoil the race results. If you have not yet watched the AMA races from Sears Point, you may want to turn off the podcast. But it's a good interview. It was fun talking to Jason. So why don't you take it away, Jim?
So this is Jim Race and Bob Hayes.
Hey.
And Jason DeSalvo, who we're here at Sears Point, or also known as Infineon Raceway, California. It's currently raining on a Sunday afternoon, and it's been an interesting weekend. We started off Friday afternoon with Friday day with horrible rains, and Friday got canceled out. All the privateers got a real good chance. Jason, how you doing?
Pretty good. I mean, considering the weekend we've had, some bad luck this weekend. You know, it hasn't been all bad, though. You always got to look at the bright side. We, didn't win the FX race, but we had a great close battle with Eric and came right down to the last lap. And turn seven was a pretty big save for me. And, I'm just lucky and grateful that I've held on to that thing and brought it home for second place points. We still got the championship lead in that. We went into the Superstock race leading the championship in that class, too, and unfortunately had a little tip-off. Got back on, got going. I was, running at 19th, worked my way up to, 17th or 18th, passed a couple guys, and then they threw the red flag. So it was, going to be good for me, but then the AMA decided to call the race. So.
Yeah, and that's a real drag because you had a great opportunity, a chance to get back into the pits, and you were, in fact, a half a lap ahead of the leaders, and you got the red flag first to get some extra time.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Walk me through a little bit what happened yesterday in Turn 7 and during FX, because you and Eric had a great battle going and were glued together the entire race. You got in front of him at lap 10, and then come the last lap, I was looking for you. I was looking at it from 9, and I don't see you for a while.
Yeah, I Eric made a pass on me one lap, a couple laps earlier, down in seven, passed me, and then I snuck back underneath where you kind of run out wide there, and then I snuck back underneath before the second apex of that corner, and, you know, made it work, and then I figured he was going to wait till the last lap, but he tried to do it two laps from the end, and that kind of maybe taught him a little something about what my tendency was going to be to do the next lap. So the next lap, instead of trying to, you know, just go by me and stop it or whatever, or he just kind of ran it out, passed me underneath, and then ran this big wide radius carrying a lot of speed. So I had to match his speed going underneath him. And that late in the race, we were both on a very, very soft tire, softer than we've run anyplace else for race tires. And mine just didn't have the grip at the end. It wasn't there. And after such a close battle, you know, something's got to give. And it was my rear tire that did. So I was just happy, you know, I could hang on. But I'll tell you what, that bike's going to have to do more than that if it wants to throw me off.
Speaking of which tires, and the only reason I'm guessing you were able to run softs is because the temperatures here were cool all weekend.
Yeah.
And what you pulled off was a lap record for both Formula Extreme and Superstock, right?
Yeah.
And you're down in some times that are on the Formula Extreme bike that are near or getting damn close to Superbike times.
Yeah. We had a good pace going in the FX class. We were in the 38s the whole time. And even in the Superstock class, we were running 37s the whole time.
Yeah.
Until it took over. But
that.
Yeah. It was good. It was a good weekend and with some low spots in it. So we're just going to get everything back together and keep forging on. We get Elkhart Lake up next. And before that, we go and test and at Miller Motorsports Park in Esau, and we're going to be doing that this next week, so there's not much of a break. I got to go right from here to there. And
that's quite the track, isn't it?
There's
a brilliant picture of you that I saw in Road Racing World. Are you looking back over your shoulder
on
the mountains?
On my desktop, yeah.
That's awesome. It's like you went through the corner, you got distracted by the beauty of it, but you're still basically over on the ground going, holy cow, this is cool.
I think I was on my in lap at one point now, but yeah, it looks like I'm just like checking out the scenery.
Yeah.
But yeah, the place is so beautiful. Couple things, you know, with the surface. I hope the surface is a little bit better when we go there this next time. It wasn't that it was bad. I mean,
it's just green.
It's smooth as glass, and it's really new. But it was tearing up tires real bad for us, and everybody was having the same kind of problem. So hopefully, now that they've had some bikes on the track and whatever they're running around there, it'll kind of break it in a little bit so that we can get more than six laps out of a set of tires.
Yeah, that's tough. Jumping back to Superstock, so your lead coming in here was how many points?
One.
And so Hacker pulled out how many?
Yeah, I haven't even looked at the point stack up yet after that race. So I would guess I'm third or fourth probably. Okay. I know May's been finishing really real consistent, but it seemed like us three guys, me, Jamie, and Aaron Yates had broken away.
Yep.
From the rest of the field a little bit in the points run, because we had monopolized the podium up until this race so far this season. And we had just kind of traded places. We each had a win, and then coming in here, kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, well, this place eats up, especially the rain. This time in this is nuts, and the weather in California's been crazy. Well, Jason, totally appreciate it. You've had a very cool season so far. Lots of poles. You got single points. They all count in the end.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, in the last whatever 2 years, I've gotten 12 points out of that.
Yeah.
And it's funny to think back and say, you know what, last year I lost the championship by less than that. So
I know.
You know, that's one thing. I'm just going to keep it going. We got the streak going. We're up to 12 now. It's a new record for the AMA, too. Matt's longest pole streak was 11.
Rocket.
We tied him at Cal Speedway and then, surpassed here. So.
Something else for Matt to be unhappy about.
I know. It's, he doesn't have it bad enough already.
Yeah.
But,
all right. Well, hey, totally appreciate you taking the time with us.
Guys.
And try and talk to you later in the season.
Cool.
And good luck on the rest.
Like I said, that was pretty cool. Nice to talk to Jason. He's a good guy. Wish him the best of luck through the rest of the season, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk with him a little bit more. It was a very interesting conversation, a little quick. We knew that Jason was pressed for time. It was raining. We were pressed for time, so we didn't want to keep him for a very, very long time. Try to let the guy eat and recover from his weekend's activities. So in any event, we'll probably be hearing from them in the future, and thank you very much to both Jim and Jason DeSalvo for that. Okay, that's going to do it for today. Thank you very much for downloading the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Feel free to send us any commentary that you'd like to in an email. The email address is, as always, motogpod@motogpod.com. I enjoy hearing from the listeners. And until next Friday, hang in there and enjoy the good riding weather and enjoy the races. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.